General name reel 3. Now, I noticed from your autobiography that during the First World War you were particularly impressed by the methods of the French army staff. Could you tell me a bit about what in particular impressed you in the way they worked?
Well, the staff system of a chief of staff being in charge of all branches of staff work seemed to be better than ours, where we have we did have then a staff divided into two branches: the general staff and the administrative staff, and the commander having to deal with both, and any coordination required being done between the different grades of staff officer. Whereas there, the commander merely gives his decisions and instructions to one chief of staff, who tells whatever branch of the staff has to act what they're to do. And it seemed likely to work more smoothly than the British system. And at one time I thought we were going to possibly take that up, but I don't think we have.
Could you give me any examples of the way, of the disadvantages of the British staff system at this time? What kind of functions didn't it carry out particularly well, or what kind of problems did it create?
Well, movements, for instance, if the commander wanted, say, in a big formation, an army or a corps, commander wanted a division moved, perhaps by mechanical transport, from one place to another. The bus columns in that time, there were bus columns available, and they were detailed by the administrative, the Q branch. Well, the general staff would have to issue orders as to the time of move and the route to be followed, and the Q staff would have to issue orders to the bus column as to its rendezvous, and so on. And there'd have to be two people making up the order for the start of the march and the detail of it, and the what's to be done at the far end. Whereas the French system, the chief of staff would have the thing worked out under his own direction in a much more simple and direct fashion. And I don't say there wasn't, there were muddles, because it was done pretty carefully, but you could have a mix-up by the general staff officer detailing something and not getting it quite clearly across to the Q staff, who had to get the buses to a certain place, and if they didn't rendezvous properly, so on. That's the sort of thing that might happen.
Can you think of any occasions when such a mix-up actually took place, just to illustrate this point you're making? Apart from your reactions to the French army, apart from your contact with the French army and the impressions they made on you, how much contact did you have with the French civilians? I'm interested particularly in getting some idea of how well received the civil population of France, how well received the British forces were by the civilian population of France.
Well, all the time we were very well received at that period. When I was in a junior position, with billeted with my troops, the French civil population were very kind to us and very forthcoming, and all the way through.
That didn't vary at any stage in the war.
No. And when I was higher up, with a divisional headquarters, and again billeted on the French people, I recollect again, they were very kind and forthcoming.
Were there any ways at all in which either the French or the Belgian civilian population made the British forces feel less than welcome?
No, I don't think so. Again, I recollect at the end of the war, going through Belgium. Of course, we were then releasing them from German occupation, and we were welcomed with open arms by the Belgians in Belgium just before the armistice.
Yes. Going on to the Germans, talked about an ally, let's talk about an enemy. From your experience in actual operations against German forces, what qualities about the German army impressed you most?
They were generally speaking highly disciplined. And their artillery fire was uncertain. It varied. It was uncertain in some cases. They put down barrages which were ineffective. They were the wrong range. On the other hand, as a rule, their machine gun fire was extremely effective. Enfilade machine gun fire was usually very deadly. Their rifle fire, nothing special, not frightfully effective.
Tell me of some occasions when you witnessed the efficiency of the German machine gun fire at its best.
Well, at the Battle of Gommecourt,
yes,
the division on our left, the Gommecourt salient, which the division I was with then, the 56th London Division, we attacked successfully and captured the German trenches. The division on our left was mown down by German machine gun fire, never got into the German trenches at all. And the division on our right, they were stopped by German artillery barrages. And the result was we got in and we were isolated. And the attack, we were in the German, we captured our objectives and we were isolated all day and had to withdraw at night.
apart from...
That was on the 1st of July 1916.
Yes.
The big Somme battle.
Yes. Apart from the Germans and the French, who you've said something about, were there any other allied or enemy forces who, for any reason at all, made an impression on you, good or bad?
No, didn't see any other.
Right. What about the Americans? What sort of impression did they make on you?
The last, one of the later attacks, not long before the end of the war, we attacked in Belgium with an American division on our left. And we reached our objectives, took thousands of German prisoners and the British divisions on our right. We were on the left of the British line. British divisions on our right again succeeded, got at their objectives. The American two divisions on our left, they were very slow in advancing and didn't get their objectives until long after we did. They did get their objectives. Then we were told to be ready for the next attack within 48 hours. We were ready and the people on our right were ready. The Americans weren't ready and the whole thing was delayed for 4 days because the Americans had got their rear area leading up to the captured trenches in such a congestion and muddle that they couldn't get their reserve troops up, they couldn't get their fresh ammunition up. We heard afterwards that they'd got their supply, their food supplies, mixed up in fact ahead and blocking all the roads so that they could move their artillery forward. That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A complete muddle.
Yes. I wonder to what extent this was due to inexperience or whether it was just inefficiency.
Well, a bit of both. They'd been out there long enough to have been trained to that amount of efficiency.
Yes.
A bit of both, I think.
Did they seem to improve with experience?
Well, we went next door to them after that, but I think they did improve, but I think the same thing happened, we heard, further right down south in the St. Mihiel salient, right away down south where they were operating with the French, and we did hear that there was some pretty muddled organisation down there.
I think most of the written histories of the First World War paint quite a good picture of the quality of the French of the American army. They certainly suggest that their impact on the operations that they took part in was very significant.
They were good fighters. They were good fighters, but I query their rare organization. Not sure about that.
Another thing which interests me is what the relationship was like between the officers and men in the units in which you served.
In the case of the sappers, couldn't have been better. It was ideal. We knew, and the officers knew their men absolutely inside out. The men were as loyal as they could be. They would do anything for us. And if anything happened to the men, one, if they were wounded or anything, one made certain they were looked after and evacuated, got back,
yes,
and all that sort of thing.
But was it a very formal relationship?
No, it was. There was always discipline, but it was always friendly.
Another of the things which comes out of one's readings of the histories of the First World War is the point that when the army was opened up to very large numbers of volunteers and conscripts who had no military background, the social division between the officers and the men became very noticeable, and many of the histories would make the point that because the officers tended to hold themselves very aloof from the other ranks, that there wasn't very good communication between them and information wasn't shared very effectively.
Well, of course, I only dealt with a regular unit before. In regard to close communication, later on, I became brigade major in a territorial infantry, territorial division. I was brigade major of a territorial infantry brigade, and the relationship was close between officers and men. Actually, it may have been a special case in that it was a London division, and the men and the officers were much the same class. There were a great many in the ranks were London businessmen or clerks and so on, and the officers much the same. So there was no great division. And I know when I was brigade major, I went round front line frequently and so on, and there was no feeling of aloofness. One could talk to any of the men, and as one did.
Did you notice any difference in the relationship between the officers and men in the regular unit that you had been in, and say this territorial division which you were transferred to? Did the relationship vary in any way?
Well, I should think perhaps in the case of that territorial unit, it may have been a little less formal, because, as I say, they were all much of the same class, whereas the regular Royal Engineer Company that I had been with, they were all pre-war regulars, and although, as I say, there was perfect communication between them, they had been trained together in peacetime and so on, and you know, they hadn't lived together. They had the officers' mess and the NCO's mess and the men's barrack room, but there was perfect accord with them all, and the men were extremely loyal. And I can tell you a sort of example. When I heard, it was after I'd left the company and become adjutant RE, I heard that one of my corporals had got wounded, and I heard he was left until dark in a little concrete shelter. I took the trouble to go 2 miles up from where the headquarters of the CRE's office was, to go and see him. And he was lying there, and when I poked my head in, it was light enough to see in this little dugout place, and he said, he said, why, it's the captain. And said, oh, thank you, sir, for coming to see me. And I said, how are you? And we had a little chat. And he said he was all right. And he said, and I said, well, they'll get you out the moment it's dark, they'll carry you out. Well, that was the sort of relationship.
When you were an officer with the regular RE unit, would you expect other ranks to volunteer information which might be militarily important for one reason or another? Would you expect them to volunteer what might be regarded perhaps as military intelligence information?
To me?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
You would?
Oh, yes. Rather. If they'd seen anything...